to the club, cause you're that kind of nerd.
Welcome, patrons, to your exclusive, although be it delayed, coverage of Spider-Man Far From Home.
We are consistently late, and that's okay.
Listen, there was a lot going on. A lot of things are happening. Sorry this is late.
Pieces are moving. Global economies are being toppled. We're a little tied up sometimes, but we did see this movie.
I want to say, because of our delay, I did make the Spider-Man 3 episode available for all our patrons. So you got that. So sorry that we took so long. The retro reviews are usually safe for the additional tiers, but you all got it.
Huzzah.
Let's start with some cold hard facts about this movie. I saw this 3 times already. I've seen this movie 3 times.
Well, then you should be able to talk about it.
I should. How many times did you end up seeing the movie? Oh my God, was it just once?
It was just once, but it wasn't 4DX. I feel like that counts as 1.5.
Okay.
Because I was fully immersed.
Okay. Here's, before we get first impressions about this movie, here's something that bothered me about the movie in regards to the whole theater experience. You have to stay for all the stingers to get the entire movie. If you left early, not only did you miss the reveal at the end, but then you missed this other big reveal at the very end. And I feel that should have been either in the movie or really.
See, I don't find that as a problem because the stingers used to be that integral to the story.
And then somewhere along the way, shawarma, right?
No, that started with Avengers.
Right.
The Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, like the stingers used to be integral to what was going on or what was about to happen next.
Right, but they were what was going to happen next, not what just happened.
I would argue Thor for it with you.
All right.
Or is it Thor or was it Captain America? Whichever one had Selvig, that was Captain America. Had Selvig meeting with Nick Fury with the Tesseract? Yeah.
Yeah, that was Captain America.
Yeah, that was pretty integral to what had just happened into the movie.
But it didn't change. Anyway, we'll get to this in a minute. First impressions.
You wanted to start off the top of the show.
Fine. Here's my problem.
You thought I wouldn't have anything to say about it.
I didn't think you would. Here's the thing. Knowing it's just fine. Spoilers for it. Knowing that they were Skrulls changes the way that you
fine. Just spoilers. Well, the title of the episode is Spoiler Cast, so right. I hope everybody knows it's spoilers.
So the fact that they were Skrulls, right, has larger implications to the MCU, right? But it directly affects the characters that we just witnessed in that movie and changes some of their behaviors and choices.
Agreed.
Why wasn't that in quote unquote the movie? Because once the title start, quote unquote the movie is over. You are now doing fun things for the fans. That's what stingers are for. At the end of our podcast, where we put little stingers in there, none of that is a whole topic that is really important to the show.
Are you trying to say that we're Marvel now?
No, because, well, we're Marvel, but we're definitely not Sony.
I disagree. All right. It's not little things for the fans. If it was little things for the fans of the comic book or the Marvel universe, they wouldn't have successfully trained everybody to sit in the theater till the end of the credits.
Here's my thing, though.
You know, a person who's never been seen a Marvel movie, when they get up and start leaving and you're like, oh, nope, that guy has never seen a Marvel movie before. Like,
but it doesn't change. They are.
It's always integral.
But it doesn't change what just happened. It always teases what's happening in the future.
I don't really think it matters.
For example, if you left Iron Man early and never saw the scene of Nick Fury showing up and talking about the Avengers initiative, does that matter that when you go see the next Marvel movie? No. When you see the Tesseract, right? Just that you talked about with Loki pretending to be the scientist, right? For that, does that really affect the next movie that you saw? Does it affect the movie you just watched?
No, but when
they
watch,
explain this
when,
to you,
when you watch Iron Man 2 and Iron Man goes to talk to Thunderbolt Ross, that affects a movie that was released 2 years prior. So,
but that's
no
because
deal.
Nobody watched that movie.
I enjoyed that movie. I think that movie gets a lot of flack.
I do agree that the Marvel Steiners definitely tease up some future movies. However, they don't leave you in the dark, and they are explained later. But it doesn't
that
affect.
Stinger,
but it
that
doesn't
Stinger
affect,
does tee up some
but
stuff.
It
that's
doesn't
happening.
Affect the movie you just watched. That's my problem.
I don't care. You're wrong.
Okay. Well, you're an idiot. Anyway, let's go to some first impressions. I think, yep, collectively, our first impression was, holy fuck, what a fucking good movie.
Yeah, and yeah. You're wrong.
Really?
No, about
oh,
the
about
other
the,
thing.
The same thing. Okay, gotcha. I want to start talking a little bit about, I want to talk about the performance of Jake Gyllenhaal in this movie.
Amazing.
Because it was fantastic, wasn't it?
He's so good in everything.
So my wife was...
Even the stuff that's bad, he is good
yes,
in
he,
it.
I agree with you. Like Nightcrawler. I didn't like Nightcrawler, but he was fucking amazing.
Oh, see,
in
I haven't seen it, but I've heard nothing but great
he's
things about that.
Very good. When my wife saw this movie...
My wife!
Thank you. She was unfamiliar with Mysterio. And was like, oh, this is cool. We're getting like another like superhero. That's fun. I'm just like, wait until you find out. As a person who knew the twist that Mysterio was bad, I was still really in, just going, wait, are they going to change this? Like, is he actually not bad?
I liked the way they did it.
Me too.
Like, I enjoy the idea that he worked for Stark and that he's not Mysterio's not just one man. It was a team of right. At least like a couple people.
It's an idea.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's cool. I think it's a modern twist because visual effects artists do not really exist anymore.
Right.
It all happens in a computer. Right. So being able to twist that story a little bit, give him a little chip on his shoulder. Why the heck would he be doing this? Oh, well, he wants Stark technology that was given to Peter. I think it's great. I think this movie was very, very Iron Man heavy.
Oh, God, yes.
Even more so than Homecoming.
I agree with
that. And he was actually in Homecoming. And I'm not even like saying that that's a bad thing about it, but like, I think this is like the last time you're going to see Stark like everywhere.
I was surprised that every major city in Europe had a huge
just
Tony
had
Stark
some
memorial.
Giant mural to Tony Stark. Well, I mean, he saved the world a couple times.
I get that, but like no, like it was just it's everywhere. And also, I'm sitting there going, "Do you have to hit me in the feels that hard every time we go
every
to a new
time.
City? Do
like,
you have
hey,
to hit me
city.
That hard?
Yeah.
Hey, it's a I new feel city." You. By the way, Tony Stark is dead. Okay, I just want to let you know that. Bye.
I feel you.
What I liked about Jake Gyllenhaal's performance too, what I thought was exceptional, right? What would have been a really bad, poorly done scene was in the bar with the speech. After
yeah,
he
but
gets
he sells
Edith,
that so well.
He does such a great job.
He does
I'm thinking
like this
you put
maniacal
that in
kind
anyone
of...
else's hands, it would yeah. have been overdone. It would have been bungled. Because honestly, it was long. It was a longer speech than you would want to admit. You could have cut a few things from it, but his performance is so dynamic, so engaging that you're like, yes, more. Keep going. Like,
yeah.
What about that dude over there? You didn't think
I
him at all.
I love how they brought in people from other scenes of Tony Stark. They brought in the guy from my favorite scene of all time.
I'm playing the clip. I don't care if we get hit for it. I'm playing the
of
clip
me
right now.
Or of actual Jeff Bridges?
Of actual Jeff Bridges.
It's impossible. Tony Stark was able to build this in a cave with a box of scraps.
Okay, they brought in that guy, which was great. I mean,
which by
like,
the way, just so you know, that is the guy from A Christmas Story.
No, well there you go.
There you go.
Man, I learned something.
fucking hate you.
I love that. I really love that entire scene.
I also like the tie-in to the Iron Man barf scene, right?
Yeah, the Civil War scene.
Yep,
and like I bought it. I bought it all. Yep. It's just like, oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense. He was, you know, off screen. And like it also makes sense that Tony Stark, for as good as he was at the end of the day also a businessman, mm-hmm. and also had people working for him who created stuff that he then took, refined, made better, and then said, I'm gonna call that thing barf.
Yeah.
And then the guy who probably did like all the stuff that was like the groundwork of it was like, what the no, this is this. I did this too. Like,
right.
I get that.
It's the dark side of that. Tony, because Tony at Tony was not.
He's not perfect. He was never perfect.
He was never perfect, but he also was very self-centered. Obviously, the story of him at the end of Endgame is him giving up that, right, and changing that about himself, right, and not being self-centered, making the ultimate sacrifice. But when Tony was alive in Iron Man 1, 2, 3, and all the other movies, he was a pretty, you know, a pretty selfish dude at times.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't try to sweep that under the rug. As a matter of fact, it calls out the fact that other people are trying to sweep that under the rug.
Right.
And that don't ignore this man's flaws. He had some. I thought it was an interesting thing that Tony and also too is just not revered by everybody. In this guy's neighborhood, there's not a mural of Tony Stark. As a matter of fact, there's probably a dartboard somewhere with Tony Stark's picture on it.
Right.
So it's interesting to see that. The other thing that I really liked about his performance was the ability to switch, right? Of just being diabolical. You know, when he's with his crew and they're talking about going to London, and it's, you know, London's a beautiful city. Yes, there will be casualties, but they will rebuild. And they're just like, dude, that's a fucked up thing to say.
Yeah.
The one guy just pointed to you and said, oh, man, there's going to be a lot of casualties. And you're like, yeah. They'll hire a crew. Like, bricks and stuff. They'll fix it. He didn't really have the regard for human life. Where you're, at first, when he's giving the speech, you're like, I believe that you're justified with this. And you're like, oh, God, you're going to kill people.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to kill people. It was great. And the fact that Mysterio had the fishbowl on his goddamn head for
Can we just talk about, like, the suit?
Please.
He just looked great. He just looked fantastic. He looked dynamic. Like the scene with him, like, kind of floating, fighting the water elemental or Hydro Man, whatever you want to call it. It was just so cool, and he looked fun. And every time he was playing the hero, I was like, "This is fun." It's a shame he's evil, but it was just so well done.
Well,
and he was so good in that role.
It's one of those things where when you look at, and when we were watching Spider-Man 3 the other week, really looking at Spider-Man's rogues gallery and realizing that if just a little nudge, just a little different, if one different thing happened, these would be very powerful, nice people. These could be allies to Spider-Man.
Very, very different people.
I mean, we looked at Sandman, right? I'm like, that guy would be an ally if Spider-Man didn't try to kill him in that subway scene. I think he'd be an ally for him. I think you could turn him.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so good about Spider-Man's rogues gallery in general.
Right.
Is that they're not all bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you think back in Homecoming with Vulture and what his whole motivation was. And you're like, I kind of get it.
I empathize. I
empathize with this guy. I think he's doing the wrong thing and he's kind of a monster for it, but I get it. And just like in this movie, like, I get it. I get why Quentin is pissed. I get why he's angry and upset with Tony and hence the world. But you're taking it a little bit too far, man. I mean, but yeah, I mean, that's what makes a good villain in general.
Right.
Is, you know, a lot of the great villains you can empathize with. You get where they're coming from. I just thought it was done extremely well in this movie. I think his slow, I don't think it was slow, but like his slow reveal of just how evil and diabolical he was all the way up until the end, all the way into post-credit scenes. Was just like when you think, oh, he's finally given up, and then like he's behind Peter at the end and like try like pointing a gun at a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you were ready to kill a kid. Okay.
Well, even with getting him in front of the train, right? Watching him like put Peter in a position to get him in front of a train.
Yeah. Oh, that the illusions were amazing.
Oh my God, dude.
That entire scene where like they and I dude, there's so many like iconic like scenes from comic books, the multiple Mysterios, the there's a scene where they're focusing in on the bubble head and it's
a
snow globe that's Spider-Man's trapped. It's like so many awesome images, and that's exactly what I wanted. Every time I've said for the past however many years that they should do Mysterio in a movie, that is the scene I'm talking about. It was so well done.
Yeah.
I was so happy with how that turned out.
I thought the illusions translated really well. I thought he was a fantastic villain. Seriously. I thought it was incredible. And I liked the blending of technology. It was really great. Now, lingering question. Curious to get your opinion on this. Is Mysterio dead?
No.
That's what I said, too.
I don't think so at all.
The thing for me that nailed it was when Peter puts on the Edith glasses and he goes, "Is this real?" And her reply is, "All illusions have stopped." Right? All simulations have stopped. I was like, that didn't answer his question. What Edith said is, "I don't see any simulations," but it doesn't mean that he's dead.
Right.
So I think he is still very much alive or there, in a place that he could be revived.
I mean, besides the fact that it's Mysterio and sleight of hand is his thing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to make you look this way and do something different is his thing. There are still a couple things left unanswered that are making me say he's alive. Like, they make a very big deal about him needing the suit for some reason at the end.
Yes.
And then he doesn't ever put on the suit. And you're like, well, what was the suit for? I think that though that video that is shown at the in the post-credit scene was filmed after the fact. And that's what he needed the suit for.
Oh, okay.
So that he is alive. He did not die on that bridge. He put a little green screen up because he had the footage already from the bubble helmet.
Right.
And he superimposed himself in there, filmed that footage, and then released it.
Now, what did the other villain, the guy from Christmas Story, he had a flash drive of stuff and he took that and ran. What did he have?
I think that was the footage that was released.
Oh, okay. You think I have the footage. Okay, cool. Right on. I get by that. We'll talk a little bit about Peter, and then we're going to get to the reveal for...
Let's talk about Peter, because I have some things to say about Peter.
Please, take the floor.
This movie... Okay, this movie is feels... The feels train all over the place, especially for Peter.
Right.
And this movie is not just about the pressure that he feels of taking over, for Iron Man and being a hero like Tony... Ultimately, this movie is about baggage and letting that baggage go.
Right.
And it's illustrated best when he is leaving for his trip and he's got his suitcase and his suitcase says BJP on it, which is for his Uncle Ben Parker. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That suitcase is then blown up.
Blown up. Yes.
Like he's letting that baggage go. He's letting the baggage of Uncle Ben's death go. He's letting the baggage of Tony's death go, right. And he can finally be his own hero, his own person. And it was just done so freaking well. And Tom Holland is so good.
I think that it's funny you bring up the suitcase because I saw it several times to get the nitpick of things. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a little odd knowing that Aunt May knew that it was blown up and was like, "Oh yeah, your luggage is blown up." And not like, "Oh yeah, your Uncle Ben's suitcase is gone." Like, no, I'm sure he doesn't have a lot of heirlooms, honestly, floating around, after the whole blip thing.
I think she's not past it, but I mean, I think she's already let go of that. Like, she has moved on. She doesn't need the suitcase anymore. Peter hasn't. And this is the only time we haven't seen what happened to Uncle Ben, but we all know why Peter hasn't. He blames himself for Uncle Ben's death. If he hadn't done what he did, Uncle Ben could still be alive.
Right.
And I'm sure he feels that some sort of way about Tony as well. Like because that's the way Peter is. You know, I could have done something. You know, there should have been something more I could have done to help him.
Metaphorical and physical baggage.
Exactly. And, this was just all about that scene at the end after he talks to Happy.
Yeah.
And he's building his own suit and Happy just looks at him like he's looking at Tony again. It was so freaking touching and it was just so well done.
Well, I also like the part too that Happy was like, no one's going to be Tony Stark. Tony couldn't even be Tony Stark all the time. Like even he was trying to figure it out. He was kind of dealing with it. So no, you're not going to be the next Tony Stark because no one can do that. Not even Tony. And then, just like you said, watching him build the suit and he put on the AC/DC and he goes, I love Led Zeppelin. You're just like, oh, God, you are not the Spider-Man you are the Spider-Man that we all need and we've waited for. Thank you.
That's a great moment.
Thank you for it. It's a good part. The other thing was this. Something that was very evident as you watch this movie. That Spider-Man's powers and abilities right now, very limited against the foes that he was facing in this movie. For instance, the Hydra Man, right? he shot webs and was like, well, that
he can't do jack against
that
Hydro
didn't
Man.
Work. And the thing that really stuck out to me was when he puts on the mask, right? He goes to Mysterio and goes, hey, let me help you. And he goes, what do you mean? Well, I'm very strong and very sticky. And I'm like, that pretty much is your power set. That's what you're good at. Yeah. You're very strong and very sticky. But the part of it, though, that he I think he wasn't even aware of himself, or maybe he doesn't like to brag or boast about, is how his ingenuity comes into play to become just next level when he takes that drone apart and he has the shield and he's got like almost like a cap shield and a Mjolnir hammer, right? And he's rocking up and going to Mysterio, where his ingenuity is what makes him so impressive. And that's why he's a good fit for Tony Stark, because he can take that ingenuity and take his super sticky and super strength and use that as a weapon. It's incredible to watch.
This movie definitely highlighted just how smart Peter is, which I think has been the failing of almost every other Spider-Man movie.
Right.
They don't really get it. Like, he's more than just, oh, I'm a bookworm or I'm a science nerd. But even though he is that, he is able to think of these ridiculous, in to your point, ingenious solutions on the fly. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's always going to come out on top. He's always going to find a way around the obstacle. Yeah, I can't punch Hydro Man, but I will find a way to use my environment so that I can still come out on top. That's what Spidey's always been about.
Right.
And this movie did a really good job of that. I love the jokes about the Peter Tingle. That was fun, because we haven't named it Spidey Sense yet.
Oh, no. Something that did come up with the Peter storyline for this was the Edith glasses, which, by the way, listener, I have to tell you, Brian owns a pair of the Edith glasses that he purchased online. They're not the blue ones, though. He didn't get the blue tin. He got a golden black one. It's pretty nice. Someone else was talking to us about the movie, a mutual friend of ours, and was talking a little bit about the trope of the artificial intelligence interface and, a name kind of thing that's floating around the MCU. Did it bother you that Edith was one of the catalysts for this, and that it's again another talking AI that's kind of leading our hero on his journey?
No, because it's not like it's downloaded in his suit. It's a MacGuffin. It's the thing that everybody's trying to get, you know, like it's essential to the plot. Like I was fine with it.
Okay.
I think this is probably the last time you'll see something like that.
That's what I'm hoping for.
With the death of Tony, I mean, we don't have an Iron Man suit to talk back and forth with anymore. So you're not going to see that as often, especially with what's on the slate for Phase 4. I mean, is Shang-Chi going to put on a headband and all of a sudden have an AI in his ear? Like, I don't think so.
I want to shift now to the supporting cast of characters. In particular, I'm going to talk about MJ and Ned, but I want to start with MJ. I thought Zendaya did a fantastic job in this movie.
She's great.
They gave her so much more to do, and I liked her character even more in this movie than I did in Homecoming. In Homecoming, I thought
she was more like of a comic relief type thing.
Yeah, but it didn't always land for me, but it landed really well in this movie. I think they gave her a great voice to use this time.
They gave her a lot more to do, especially obviously, you know, figuring out that Peter is Spider-Man. I love that scene because she drops the bomb on him, and then when he finally admits it after trying to deny it, she was like, oh, really? Like, I was only like 88% sure. I was kind of taking a shot in the dark there. I had no idea. Right. Like, and so, like, that was great. And, like, I think she just did a really,
I mean,
very well done.
And the chemistry between them was fantastic.
I'm pretty sure they're actually dating.
I'm sure they did at some point, but whatever. Listen, she was
I'm
in a movie
sure
with
they
Zac,
still are.
She was in a movie with Zac Efron at one point, too. Yeah. She was in a movie with Zac Efron at some point, too, and they didn't necessarily have as good chemistry as they did with Tom Holland. But I really liked what they did with her this movie. I want more of it. I'm now a Zendaya fan, which I really wasn't before.
Oh, I've been a Zendaya fan since the Disney Channel.
Yeah, no, that was not my.
I have not. I'm just saying.
Okay, thank you.
It was a joke.
Okay, cool.
But she did, like, what was it, Shake It Up or something like that?
I don't know, Brian.
I don't know. Let's talk about Ned.
Ned had a little less in this movie, but when Ned was used, god damn, were they perfect. I love his relationship
Ned's entire tumultuous romantic journey with Betty.
So good.
From I'm going to be a bachelor in Europe to I got a girlfriend on the plane to we broke up before we landed in New York was ridiculous.
It's such a teenager thing to do.
It really is.
Nailed it.
Yeah, it really nailed and then, it. Like within 5 seconds, he wants to go and give, you know, Peter, you know, when I met my girlfriend, like, let me give you some advice.
That was the words of a young man.
Yeah, it's just like, so crazy. Very enjoyable. Flash didn't get a lot in this. So I was surprised.
Actually, I disagree with you. I think Flash was very little used, but way more story of Flash in here than you would like. You see him crave for that social media attention, him bragging about the fact that he makes those posts to make himself feel better. And then at the end of the movie, when he goes to get picked up at the airport,
his parents aren't sure.
But the other part too is when Peter's wearing the Edith glasses on the bus and he's going through the text messages of the entire bus, the one for Flash has a text that says, "Mother and father, I haven't heard from you in over 7 days.
I didn't see that.
I know. It's one of those things where he's reaching out. I mean, the boy is just craving for some attention from his parents. Yeah. Again, under other watchings, you start to pick up that they were really tossing in some of those things for him. And I got a lot more sympathy for Flash than I ever have in any incarnation of Flash that I've seen. This is the one that I think was rooted a little more reality, because let's be honest, at a magnet school, he's not going to be a jock. He's not going to be like a Eddie Brock, but nice kind of thing. He's, you know, the bully nerd. I mean, like, what else is he going to be? I think the actor who plays him does a fantastic job. And I enjoyed him so much.
Yeah. I didn't say I didn't like him. I just,
well, yeah, I know
he didn't get a ton to do like he did in Homecoming. He was way more central to Homecoming.
Yeah. But I think giving Zendaya and giving MJ and Ned.
You had to take it away from somebody.
You had to take it from somebody.
Yeah, you had to take it
from
Flash.
And the introduction of, what was his name?
I can't remember his name, but that storyline was fun and interesting.
Yeah. You want to talk about the blip?
I love how they dealt with the blip. You know why? It's so amazing is within the first 10 minutes, I'm cracking up with the school announcements, and they're talking about the people that disappeared, and they show the marching band practicing in the gym, and like half of them disappear.
Which was scary, by the way.
Which was scary, right? And then they follow it immediately by a clip of when everybody came back, they all came back where they were, and there's a basketball practice happening in the gym. Marching band comes back, and this kid gets slammed with a basketball. It was so good.
So funny. And then the other part, too, was this, you know, in the trailer, we saw this appearance of Spidey coming for, like, a homelessness event. You're like, oh, for the homeless people. Like, no, these are people that were displaced by the blip. And Aunt May is like, when I blip back, the grandma thought I was a ghost. The wife thought I was a mistress. There are people living in my house.
Yeah,
they're just like, oh wow, I didn't think about some of the implications. I mean, we touched upon a little bit in Endgame, but like, oh, I guess, I mean, there really are such larger implications of just people popping
just
back,
coming back, yeah,
in there. I don't want to touch, and I don't want to know how they're addressing or not addressing the fact that there were airplanes in the sky, and people disappeared. Let's not go into there. Everyone's safe and sound.
Yes, everybody blipped back.
I love the fact that his teacher. My wife pretended to disappear in the blip, but she ran away with someone from her fitness class. Yeah. We even held a funeral for her.
That's Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley.
Guilfoyle, and I'm sorry, he is the unsung hero in this movie.
He was very good in this movie, yes.
He was fantastic. Everything about him was great. I got to make a gif of him at one point when they're running out of the bus and or running through the town, and he has just this like this weird runaway from the Hydra Man, and it just looks like he was being chased by some raptors. He was fantastic. His comedy was on point. The fact that he was constantly being upgraded and all these different experiences given to him, and he's like,
is what you get. Your squeaky oil, your squeaky wheel gets the oil, you know?
He was so funny, and I thought he was not Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley, and just so hilarious. I thought he was a runaway star in this movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I ranted for a couple of minutes on this one. I loved it.
That's fine.
What areas of opportunity? What do you think this movie could have done a little bit better, or could have done just maybe a little bit differently for you? Is there anything that you could want out of this movie? Kind of hit the nail on the head.
This was okay. Almost perfect. This was almost Spider-Man 2.
All right. Well, I mean, technically it is Spider-Man 2.
You know what I mean.
I'm just saying, when we say Spider-Man 2 now, you're gonna have to elaborate on Spider-Man 2, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, or Spider-Man Far From Home. Let's enjoy that moment. Finally, let's talk about the best thing, one of the best things in this movie, the reveal casting of J. Jonah Jameson showing up in this. I didn't think we would get J. Jonah Jameson, and I didn't think we would get J.K. Simmons. Literally lost my mind when it happened.
Oh, me too.
The theater erupted. It was just insane. I can't believe they did it. I love what they're doing with this character as a fringe journalist, a guy who's just kind of on the internet yelling at things, and the Daily Bugle isn't really a paper, but it's like an online web series. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, newspaper is not really a thing that you can do anymore, but he's great, and I'm so glad they didn't try to recast JJJ, because he was just so freaking perfect in that role. I am highly looking forward to what they do in a new Spider-Man movie, which will come out in the 2020 never, I guess.
Well, they didn't announce it in
I know,
Phase
that
4.
Makes me upset.
Well, but that's D23. Probably because Sony's got to do their thing. This movie, okay, so what about the fact that they revealed his identity at the end? Because Peter was one of the only people in the MCU to really have a secret identity anymore. No one else really has one. People know who Thor is, or who Thor are. People know who Thor is. People know about Bruce Banner and the Hulk. They know Captain America. They know Tony Stark. They know Black Panther. They know Ant-Man. I mean, like, I can't think of anybody that has a secret identity anymore. Can you?
No, but I don't think everybody knows his secret identity. I think with the fact that he has the Edith glasses and can pretty much delete anything off the internet that he wants to permanently, I think this is how you get that dichotomy of people who really like Spider-Man and think he's a menace. I think you're going to have people who believe he killed Mysterio, but can never find the footage that proves it anymore because it's been deleted off the net permanently. And the people who still think he's a good guy, which is important for that character. And, you know, the kind of the trials and tribulations he goes through because, you know, people hate him so much.
But Peter took great lengths to perceive his identity, right? I mean, he talked to Nick Fury and said, if my class figures out, you know, I'm Spider-Man, it's over. I'm going to stop being Spider-Man. I would have to stop. Hence why everything gets rerouted. When he's at the event for homelessness, he's making sure that he has his mask on. When Happy barges in, he puts the mask on real quick. He protected it very well. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I agree with you. He's just going to delete the footage and, like, you know, it's, you know, you can't ever find it again. But I don't know. I like the fact that he was the last person to hold out. I think it just gives him a little bit of leeway. And just the fact that, you know, MJ knows, and Flash Thompson definitely now knows that he's Spider-Man, regardless of being that taken off the internet. You know he's a hardcore Spidey fan, that he's following it. What do you think about the fact that his identity is gone? And what do you think that's going to do to the dynamic to the people that are going to be featured in the rest of the movies, like Flash and you know, his class, probably? How's it going to affect him at school?
I don't think he is going to be able to go to school anymore. I think the next movie is not going to be as John Hughes' Breakfast Club as these past two have been. He's going to have to deal with some really serious stuff. I don't know how they're going to do it. If I did, I would work for Marvel.
I thought you were ideas man. Ready to go. Don't hire Brian Thornton
for
a Spider-Man
movie.
I can't improve on perfection.
I can't improve on perfection.
All right. Bottom line, this movie is fantastic. I mean, seriously, this is one of the best superhero movies I have seen. It has already broke $1 billion. It's already grossed $1 billion, people, which is good news for us. We needed this movie to break the billion mark, because if they didn't, Marvel wouldn't be involved anymore. The pitch was Sony would allow Marvel to be involved, but they had to give you know, some money towards this. They had to make the $1 billion and they got it. So we're going to have Marvel involvement in Spider-Man for a few more years. I am very interested to hear what you have to say, listeners. Is there something that we didn't cover? Something that you would like us to elaborate on? Please let us know in the comments right there on the Patreon post. Brian, anything you want to add? All right. Well, listeners, again, thank you for your patience on letting us get this episode to you. Thank you for your continued support of this show. It means the world to us. I also want to take the moment to announce our is it the retro review or is it the all right? I want to take a moment to announce our next retro review, which will be Virtuosity.
Oh, we decided on that. That's right.
We did. So, Brian, can you give me the elevator? I already have it. Can you give me the elevator?
Oh, you need to give it to me.
Okay. Can you give me the elevator pitch for Virtuosity?
What was it? 1997. Virtuosity is a movie. Takes place in the distant future where in order to train our policemen, we have downloaded the personalities of every single serial killer in the universe into a virtual reality system. One of the dominant personalities takes over and breaks out and becomes a living person played by a very young Russell Crowe.
Very young.
And is wreaking havoc and eating glass. And I will talk more about that later. But he is being... There's only one man that can stop him, the guy who killed him illegally to begin with. Yes, you know, murder is illegal in the distant future still.
Good.
And that is Denzel Washington.
Not Denzel. He plays a character, but it's Denzel Washington. I have a GIF. I put up a video on social by the time you guys are watching this. Just the GIFs associated with this movie. And just it's me so going, good. What the fuck did Brian make me watch?
It's so good.
This is going to happen. So if you are not on the proper Patreon tier... I like seriously get on That Kind of Nerd this month. You're going to want to hear us talking about Virtuosity. So thank you so much for making us your walk around your neighborhood or your drive to work. Thank you for your support. I love the fact that you guys are letting us do this, and I hope you have yourself a wonderful day.
Well, welcome to the club because you are That Kind of Nerd.